Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. Michael, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can, loud and clear.
Oh, good. I'm traveling, so I just took a pause from my adventures, and I'm doing the update from a parking garage, so that's good that you can hear me.
Great. Excellent.
So we are working on getting our guest on. We're having a bit of good news update phone call challenges, but we're working on it.
Good. I just got some information. I think I see the line that she's on.
Oh, excellent.
Bring her
okay.
on. And then
yes,
I will
but,
bow out. Or you want me to stay
and
on?
Don't, yes. Well, I don't want to forget the thing I was going to talk about was people sending in the number of steps they have so far. So if I don't say it, prompt me before we hand it over to you and Sherry.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
So is Anna with us? Are you there, Anna?
Yes.
Excellent. Great. So Anna is joining us this afternoon to talk about the life process of participation. I just thought you sent this beautiful email about a process you had seen around participation, and it seemed like something that could be so helpful for so many folks, because so often conditioning has an idea of, oh, well, participation looks that way, or it has to be this way, or, you know, it's sort of an all or nothing kind of a thing. And I just thought it would be really neat to explore that a little bit and look at the life process of participation versus the conditioned one.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for the invitation to participate in this way.
Yeah, exactly.
What I'm seeing is that participation is directing the attention, and directing the attention is participation. And so when I look at my spiritual heroes, what I see is that they are living from what they choose for this life. So directing attention to wholeheartedness, to love, to generosity, to compassion, to gratitude. And in that way, living in response to life. So whatever arises into that, there's an ability to respond to that. Instead of living in reaction to conditioned mind and having attention controlled by what it says we can and can't do, or how participation should and shouldn't look like. Mm-hmm. And what dropped in around that is that a very concrete how of the participation of directing the attention is directing the attention every day, non-negotiably, to something that we love. And for me, that's the Africa Project.
To something that you love, is that what you said?
Yes.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so the bamboozlement that you were mentioning, the conditioned process of participation and ideas about how it should look, can catch attention in a process of dissatisfaction about participation.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I'd love to be doing this, but at the moment I can't for these reasons. And, you know, if I can't do this, then I might as well not bother. And so what we catch on to is that's actually attention on a process of dissatisfaction. It's not attention on a process of participation. So it's like that image that we keep hearing in the email class of getting up on our hind legs and saying, this is what I choose for this being, this is what I choose for this life. And so directing the attention for 5 minutes a day, 10 minutes a day, to doing something very simple to show up for a friend and come to love that. And the process around that is no noodling, just love, no assessments, just showing up every day.
Mm-hmm. And you know what what strikes me so much in that, Anna, as you're speaking, is that it feels like the conditioned version is all about me. You know, whether I'm doing it right or not doing it right, or if I feel like it or I don't feel like it, or I'm doing well or I'm not doing well, or how much am I contributing? But they're contributing more. And the life process is, it's just so the getting us out of the way so that we can just be life. And life just naturally participates with itself. You know, we don't have to think about how I'm doing or not. I mean, I was really thinking about that when you said, you know, you're spiritual heroes, where it's just, there isn't a me who's making these decisions. There's just life. And if we're aligned with life then there's just the obvious movement to do whatever's called for, whether that's, quote, a big thing or a, quote, little thing.
Exactly, exactly. And when, I've lost it, but yes, when attention is on a process of dissatisfaction disguised as participation,
right,
then
right.
We're separated from the wholehearted participation that we are.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. From the participation that we are. Well put.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love
mm-hmm.
that connection of focusing attention, because, you know, it does always come back to that, doesn't it? I mean, that's the crux of practice, is directing attention. And it's why I think, you know, for quite a while now, one of the big focuses that the guide and all of practice really has encouraged us towards is, what lights you up? As you say, what do you love? You know, and directing the attention to that, because from that place, we are life. You know, we're completely connected. So then we don't even have to try. We're not making an effort. We're simply putting the attention where it naturally wants to be. And then from that, it's just so clear how to participate.
Yes, and whatever arises into that, we're open, we're available.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and, you know, it just seems like such an important thing to recognize, because we just finished a retreat, you know, back east, and people will say at the end of the retreat, you know, oh, we're so grateful to, you know, you for putting on the retreat and that sort of thing. And it's just so clear that everyone in every way makes that retreat happen, literally, whether they're cleaning the bathrooms, cooking the food, being a retreatant, being a facilitator, it's all one thing, you know.
Yeah.
And I just think that that's an important thing to remember in the Bridgewalk season, that truly, I mean, from like the tiniest little 3-year-old who's in the project to Teresa Capenda, who's running the entire thing, it's all one, it's all life living. And there isn't a, oh, this is good participation, this is small participation, this is important, this is unimportant. It's all one thing.
Yep. All cells in the body of the Buddha.
Yeah, all cells in the body of the Buddha. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is that taking the attention away from that self-conscious, you know, what's my role, to just being part of it, that's where the joy is. That's where the fun and the excitement.
Wholehearted jumping in, and an inspiration for me has been just remembering watching Natasha, one of the stay in school heroes, leaping over the game wider, which means jump in Bemba, and just seeing that wholehearted leaping and really turning it into that every day in this very concrete way. So for example, just, you know, recording the Why We Walk Together, beautiful pieces of writing, and in that I hear the wholehearted participation of the person who wrote that, and I hear the wholehearted participation in the voice who's made the recording, and we walk together, you know, with the earbuds in, and let life drop in new ideas to participate and talk to the mentor about it. And
oh, that's really fun. So are you saying that those the newsletters that are coming out, you're recording those on your recording?
Yeah.
I mean, that are coming out every Saturday. Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
What a fun idea.
And so that there's the wholehearted participation in the writing, the wholehearted participation in the voice of the person doing the recording, and then we go walk together.
Yeah, I love it. I love it, because it isn't, you know, it's those stories are why I walk, but it's really why we walk. It's not one person's story. It's every story is all of our story.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, that's really fun.
Like Teacher Joy saying when she first arrived at the property in her Why We Walk Together piece, she knew it was just a place for her, and she was lit up. You know, we have that experience of practice. We light up and we feel home. And it's that kind of experience of something that shows up for us every day, and we then, you know, we feel the universe getting behind us, and all we want to do, all we can do is want to show up every day for what light is.
Truly. So I did want to highlight, because we've had a number of people who have been writing in saying, where do I send my steps? You know, I'm doing all these steps. Where do I send them? So the place to send them is to the email address Why We Walk at livingcompassion.org, which is on the newsletters that are coming out. I think it's usually on a Saturday. The link is there, the same place where we're asking people to send us, you know, 50 words or fewer about how you're participating, which we would also encourage folks to do. And again, just kind of along this theme that we're talking about, you know, whatever it is, like I'm recording the Why We Walk stories and listening to them on my recordings, or, you know, how, just all the ways that we're participating. So write those in, and then the steps that you're taking. So we started the steps sort of tracking, or at least I did for mine, the week that we launched, which I believe was the week of July 22nd. So, you know, you don't obviously have to go back and remember, but an approximate, you know, how many steps you usually walk per day, and then counting up the day since then, send us in your steps so far, and we're going to start to send out tallies to date. So that should be fun.
Wow.
Did I lose you?
I'm still here. I just said, wow.
Okay. Sorry. It sounded like my phone cut off for a minute there. Yeah. So I think that was all the information we were supposed to impart today. Was there anything else that you had before we turn it over to Michael and Sherry?
Oh, just a quick but huge thing, which is to put a plug in for the Good News Update conversation with you and Sherry from August the 5th, in case anybody missed that, and even if they didn't, to listen to it again, around participation in the Africa Project. It was just a, you know, tour de force of compassion and wholehearted participation and life-changing for this person.
Yeah, that was
so
where
look it up.
What's that?
I said, look it up in the archive.
Yeah, look it up. That was it. Really great. Yeah, where we asked her to come on and kind of talk about the practice of the project in particular. That was a really beautiful layout that she did for us that day. So that's a good place to start.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, Anna, so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Jen.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Anna. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
I'm all lit up.
Yeah, those going to Africa gals, I'm telling you, they'll talk about this from a parking garage. They'll talk about this from... That was really fun. Really, really fun. I loved Anna's thing about, I too love the recording those stories. Never occurred to me. I'm shocked to realize.
Yes.
Because they are. They're so inspiring. And I'm excited that we get to send in our steps. Are you excited about that?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll tell you a little something about myself. I probably said this last week too, but one of the things that I am happiest about in life is email classes, and this email class has more people staying in it than any class we've ever done.
Wow!
Now the net result of that is that it's a lot of emails to do every day. And so I have now two things. I mean, I love a lot of things I do, right? But two things that I love especially. One is writing responses to an email class, and the other is getting those steps. So it just, you know, you just wake up in the morning, and what's your day going to be? And this is it, and it's fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Email
so that lit up stuff. Say it again, Michael.
So you do email responses, and then you do some steps, and then you do more email responses.
That's exactly right.
That's
exactly right. Yes. Yeah. Yep. That's exactly it. And then throw in a few, you know, daily recollection and meditation and a little yoga and a little this, and it's a full life.
It's a beautiful life.
It really is.
It's very, a wonderful
very,
life.
Very lucky. Yeah.
That is great. And I've been enjoying it immensely as well, the email class. So thank you for all of it.
Oh, gosh. I just think it's tremendous. I say it. I just say it endlessly. Every time somebody has that breakthrough moment of,
yes,
oh my God, I don't have to live in hell any longer. I know the way out. It's just, it's just the very best.
That's
so
great. It's great. Wonderful.
Yeah.
And
so what's coming up?
Coming up on September 13th is the next at-home workshop, Exploring the Spirit of Play.
Oh. I have heard some good rumors about that one.
Oh, can't wait.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
And so if you've registered for the year-long retreat, you already have a space reserved, and anyone else is welcome to join us a la carte.
Mm-hmm.
And you, Sherry, and Ashwini will be offering workshops in Dayton, Ohio on August 30th, and Harrisburg, Pennsylvania on September 7th.
That's right. Bookends around the Eightfold Path Retreat in Bethlehem.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Should be fun.
Great. Yes, and you can spend the day with local Sangha.
Mm-hmm.
So visit schedule.livingcompassion.org for more information on these and all of our events.
Because I just asked Ashwini about this. I'm not sure it's happened yet, but there are two other things going on. One is a workshop that I'm doing in Felton in October, which is kind of far out there, but that's coming up. And I think we have another in Mountain View around in December. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, keep your eyes peeled for those local events.
See you there.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the website is the place to find all the information.
Mm-hmm. Full of goodies.
And a couple of reminders to make guest show to indicate your desire to talk with Sherry. Press *6 and then 1. And a reminder to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. So let's get started.
Okay.
First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Sherry and Michael. It's Gabriel.
Well, hello, Gabriel. How are you?
Hello. I'm very good. Very happy.
Oh, excellent. That's a lovely way to be, isn't it?
It's the only way to be.
Well, I mean, I didn't want to get extreme, but I agree with you. It's the only way to be, really, especially when we know how to do that.
Well, there's always a nook or a cranny that is happy, no matter what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you can always speak from there, right?
That's exactly right. We can always put our attention there, and make that the choice of focus.
Yeah, and it's always true.
It's always true. Yep.
Yeah.
Now, karmic conditioning, of course, self-hate would tell people, "Well, you're being phony." Because I've got a big, long story about everything that's wrong in your life, and if you're not focused on that, then you're being phony. You're just making it up. You're just being a Pollyanna. But in fact, no. Yes,
yeah.
Those
voices it's not the phony happy. It's the real happy.
That's right. But actually, the other stuff is the phony, isn't it?
Yeah.
Making made up stories about everything that's wrong in my life. When I look around and... Actually, in this moment, there's nothing wrong in my life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's so annoying to ego, isn't it?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah. It just reels in. It just hates it. It hates happiness.
It does. It does. Those are the kinds of things that we say, and people kind of roll their eyes and go, oh, yes, you're right. That's really true. And the proof of that, for anybody who's paying attention at all, is that most of the people that we know have as much as it's kind of possible for human beings to have. You know, most of us have definitely a roof over our head and plenty to eat and far, far, far beyond that, right? Our lives are not in danger every moment. Our children aren't starving. We're not going to die of some little picayune illness that could be cured for 5 cents. We really do have it made. And yet, a person can spend their entire life in utter misery because of listening to a story inside the head. So,
Yeah.
If that weren't going on, we truly, in this country and in most of the countries where people are listening in from, everybody would be deliriously happy all the time. We'd just be walking around saying thank you and grinning.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of like I am, yeah. It's it's funny, as you were saying that, I was seeing that. I've been seeing this and noticing this because it's so obvious. I guess when you see it. And then anything outside of that is so obviously ridiculous, you know. But there's still this sort of like split where there's a pull. And
yes.
I think that a big part of that is that when you speak, for me, I'll speak for myself, when I speak to others and I say sort of like exactly what you said, word for word, they do the eye rolling. And I think for me, there's a part that's looking for this to be reflected, which is why, one of the reasons why I love calling in and going on workshops and retreats. And I almost feel like, oh, this is fresh air. This is the truth, and I love that. And I even remember one time reading Emerson's essay on self-reliance. I don't know if you've read it, but I remember just when I read this, I was starting college or something, and I was just crying on the paper, and I was like, this is the truth. This is true. Mm. It's basically the same thing we're saying, and then just really wanting to have that mirrored back, which is, I think, one of the great things about Sangha, you know, and just having people say, that's spot on. Yeah, that's true. And just having that part of me reinforced, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you said a couple of things about it that I think are really significant. One is, it is crystal clear, obvious as can be, as soon as we see it.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, it cannot even be pointed out to us, which is kind of amazing when you stop and think about it. That's
the problem.
Right.
It's how amazing it is.
Yeah. Well, we have to experience it for ourselves, which is really excellent when you stop and think about it. So when a person goes through all the steps to get ready for any kind of insight, any sort of dropping in of clarity, when we're ready, it happens. It's always there, but we have to be ready to receive it. And when we are, we receive it, and then everything about us has changed. Everything about our lives has changed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's really a grand and glorious thing. And of course, it's why we don't proselytize.
Right. There's another experience that's becoming more and more available to me where I can only see the positive in other people, and in anything. And it's almost like it's just kind of like oozing out and through the through the facades and through, and I just see goodness in everyone and everything, and I don't care who it is. It's just there.
Uh-huh.
And I think that as that grows, then that need to be validated, as in what I'm seeing, it's almost like it's something that we all kind of know, but we don't all know that we know.
Yes, well, which we could say about everything, right? We all know this. That's why when we get it, it's so obvious and clear that, in fact, we always have known it, because it's who we are, what we are. Yeah, but until then, it's like there's that veil that we can't see through. So that's why, of course, people roll their eyes and think that you just don't get it, or there's something really wrong with you.
Yeah,
You're not seeing reality.
Yeah, and it just puts me right back at 4 or 5 years old.
Yeah, yeah. It can. But the helpful part about that is that we get to see how old and how deep this conditioning is. And then, as we're fond of noting, that's what gives us compassion for other people.
And myself, my 5-year-old self included.
That's right.
Now I have a little chat with that 5-year-old, and I tell him, you know, this is what's going on. And I can say it, only I could say it in a way that he'll understand it because, well, I have his experience.
That's right. That's right. You know exactly what his experience is, which is why you are the perfect candidate to work out his own salvation diligently.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't need to have my own kid for that.
That's exactly right. You already have.
I already have him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Well, good. It's lovely to hear you sounding so lit up. I'm excited for you.
It's lovely to hear you sounding so lit up, too.
Good. All right. Take good care of yourself.
Hello to the Sangha. Thank you.
All right. Good night.
Okay. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Gabriel. Sherry, I have a little more updated information about the schedule that I just received.
Oh, okay.
So Felton is open for registration now.
Good.
And for the upcoming September 13th workshop, that's the at-home one, if you're signed up for the year-long retreat, you have a spot, but you do need to confirm that.
Oh, okay.
And there's going to be an email going out asking for confirmation.
Great.
So
yeah.
People need to look for that and respond to that.
Yep. So you have a spot reserved, but we want to make sure there's a chair there.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Got
Great.
It.
Great. And we have another caller here.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Frankie from Los Angeles.
Hi there. How are you?
I am good. I am so glad to be on the air right now.
I'm glad you are, too. What's going on?
So my question has to do with conditioning. I'm sure actually all the questions are actually about conditioning. It seems that for the last few weeks I've been very happy and very present, and it feels like it should be harder. Does that?
Yep. Yep.
Does that make any sense?
Oh yeah. Well, because we have massive amounts of conditioning that says it's hard. Right. That this is one of those things that we were just talking about with Gabriel. So by the time we reach adulthood, just about everybody has that firm, deep conviction that something like being present, being awake, being aware, paying attention is really hard. You know, I mean, I'm scrunching up my forehead just with the mere thought of it. Okay. Yeah. And so, so we can see why people don't leap in that direction. Right. Now, of course, once we see this, once we see it, we realize that the only thing that's hard in life is conditioning.
Yeah. That's really been my experience. I just feel like I go through this,
you found a trick, huh?
If it's not hard, I'm not doing it right. And then I realize that I'm not doing it right. Conversation is definitely conditioning. And then I go, right.
Yeah, yes, 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 exactly. Yeah. So all of the things that we're conditioned to do, there's no, I don't know. Do we have a lot of conditioning about, everything should be hard, shouldn't it, from conditioning?
I think so. At least,
you have to work hard. Work is hard. Except relationship, right? Relationship shouldn't be hard.
No.
No, that should be easy. Actually, being rich shouldn't be hard. That's something that you should just have. Being thin. I don't know if you're thin, but you should be, right? That should be easy. So there are a lot of things that should be easy, and if they're not easy for you, then you're doing it wrong.
Right.
But paying attention and seeing how things work, especially if what you're trying to see how it works is egocentric karmic conditioning self hate, that's really hard. Paying attention is really hard. Meditation, that's really hard, really hard. And of course, what we find out is it's exactly the opposite of all of that is true.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because when I do find sitting practice a little bit difficult. It's only because I think I'm actually making it difficult for myself.
Conditioning is making it difficult for you.
Aha.
Right? Because all you need to do is sit down and pay attention.
Right.
Which you could do easily if you didn't have this giant backlog of talking to you through the whole thing.
And that's sort of what my conditioning sounds like.
Yeah. Don't own it, okay? Don't own it. It's
okay.
Just conditioning it. Yeah, it's not yours. It'd like to be yours, of course. It wants to live with you forever. Your best friend, your most intimate relationship.
Right.
But we don't want that. So, yeah, it makes everything hard and then says that the hard part of it is either inherent in whatever it is, like meditation or paying attention,
mm-hmm.
Or it's hard because there's something wrong with you. But it never says what's hard is that I'm yammering at you all the time.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's great to see that once I see that, and then and then I have to keep reminding myself of it.
That's right. Which I you know, I am such a broken record. Fortunately, I don't mind being a broken record. But that's why I'm just pounding on recording and listening.
That's the best thing ever.
Because a person has an awareness like the one, I mean, that's life-changing, right? Seeing that it changes everything. But if
it really does.
isn't doing something like recording and listening, and there isn't anything like it, so let's just say isn't doing recording and listening, the cover-up of that is going to make Watergate look like people weren't trying. Yeah? So it just closes it over. You don't remember it. You never saw it. Kind of vague. If it comes to you again, then you get beaten up for having forgotten, and that whole thing just slides off into suffering.
Yeah. Anytime I feel myself going into that, I just put on a recording and, you know, bring myself back to, you know, this is where you are.
Yes. Yes. And lots of recordings that, again, what the Buddha taught is a practice of ending suffering. So especially in this country, people are focused on Buddhism is a practice of suffering, right? That's because the first noble truth is we suffer, like that's the whole deal. But that's not what he was talking about. Yes, we do. Here's the way not to.
Right.
And that
right.
That's what we want to get focused on just as quickly as possible, because life is joyful.
It's very joyful. It's very, very joyful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't this good? Mm-hmm.
Wait, I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
I was just remarking that it's very, very good.
Yes.
It's very good. It's very good that it is this way. It's very good that we get to know it, that we get to realize it, that we have an ability to experience it and live that goodness.
Yes, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, Sherry,
anything
thank you.
Else?
No, that's it. I just wanted to share and thank you. I had stopped myself from calling because I thought I haven't gone to a retreat and I haven't met you in person and all this stuff, but I'm glad I called.
Well, keep in mind this. Conditioning tried to stop you.
Yes.
Yes? And keep
yes,
in mind
definitely.
This. Keep in mind this. You didn't listen to it.
I didn't.
That's right. That's the important bit of the whole thing. So it's very lovely meeting you in this way. And hopefully we'll get to see you on retreat too.
Yes, I plan to.
Good, good.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sherry. Thank you, Michael.
You're
good
welcome.
Night.
Thanks for joining us, Frankie. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsor, and then we'll be right back.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart. And one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have more callers here, Sherry.
Very good.
Okay. Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi.
Oh, we need... Oh, okay.
Is something wrong?
A great deal of static and noise and like that.
Is this
sounds
better?
Like tap dancing. Much better. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
oh,
sorry about that.
That's perfect.
Okay. My name is Mira. And
hi, Mira.
Hi. I'm fairly new to this work. I attended your Seattle workshop in July.
Oh,
and
good.
I read I Don't Want to, I Don't Feel Like It, which led me to sign up for the email class.
Uh-huh.
And I'm so enthusiastic about deepening this practice. I also got the game and drew a card this weekend.
Uh-huh.
I was really disappointed because the card I got was care/caring.
Uh-huh.
Because I thought it was boring and not one of the cool cards, but I've stuck with it because through recording and listening, I've come to see how I've used not caring internally to protect myself from feeling overwhelmed and as a way to keep from feeling hurt by criticism. And there have been costs to that.
Uh-huh.
So what I want to ask about...
So, Miro, one second.
Yes.
You have now discovered that it is, in fact, one of the cool cards.
One of the what?
That cool cards. Is that
absolutely
correct?
Absolutely. Yes.
All right. Very
yes,
good. Very good. Just checking. Okay.
Okay.
So, all right.
Okay. So what I want to ask about is dealing with people in my life who thrive on making other people wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Since your workshop, I've taken Not Feeling Bad to heart. And
good.
I found that ticks other people off, though. And some of the tactics that I've seen so far are pressing me to explain what they perceive to be my transgressions in the past, to answer questions about how I'll change my behavior in the future. And
wow.
Yeah.
Who are these people?
A friend. And then there's a third one. Oh, actually, there's a fourth one, but I'll just give you the third one. How I'll change my behavior. Making it my fault for failing them by not living up to their idea of who I should be in their life because they're not getting what they want from me in their interactions. So,
wow.
Yeah. So from a perspective of caring for myself and others, I just like your feedback on how do I respond? Is it enough to hold my ground and say no, I won't answer, which is what I've done before, most recently. I wonder what other approaches are possible.
Oh,
and also,
there are some other approaches, Mira.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, let me just get this last part out.
Okay.
If there's a difference between talking with someone who doesn't know your work and someone who does but doesn't record and listen.
Yeah, it's kind of night and day, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's full circle back to what we were talking about with Gabriel, right? I mean, we finally get to the point where we feel like we're living on different planets from some
yes.
folks. And so I was kind of hoping you were going to say your mother. Because with a friend, you got to put some little quotes around that, right?
Yeah, and the difficulty is that the friendship is in the context of a friendship with two other people.
Uh-huh.
So there's like a web here, and we've been working together for several years.
So you feel you're pretty committed to keeping this going.
Yeah, because if I don't, then I lose the whole thing.
Yeah, okay. Which at some point may be worth it.
Maybe.
But we'll see. So what I would encourage is kind of a crash course in reflective listening.
Okay.
Have you ever encountered reflective listening?
Is that the same thing as compassionate listening, where you say, I hear you say?
Yes, sometimes I think like peer counseling people who do a similar process.
Mm-hmm.
And so it does require a fair amount of practice, and it's not always popular with people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to go out on a limb here and suggest that it might not be popular in this case, because I suspect that the bottom line agenda is to pick a fight more than reach a place of accord. So
right, at least for me to concede.
I'll tell you what's wrong with you. You tell me why being that wrong person, you did what you did in the past, and now apologize and assure me that you're never going to be that bad person again in the future.
Right.
Now, of course, there's always the option of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a perfectly acceptable behavior. If you know that that's what somebody wants and that's all they're going to settle for, and what
I've lost connection.
Sherry? Let's see, Mary, are you still there?
I am.
Okay.
Huh.
Sherry?
No.
Oh, there you are. Sherry?
You there?
Hello?
Sherry?
No, okay.
Can you hear me,
nope.
Sherry?
Nope.
I can hear you.
You can hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Wow. That's very bizarre. I was getting ready to hang up and call in again.
Let's see. Mira, are you there?
I am.
Okay.
Wow, we're good to go. Okay. So at any rate, if you decide that it's important enough to you that you want to just put this behind you, you can just say whatever needs to be said and go on.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to be sure that you can do that without anger, bitterness, or resentment. Yeah?
Right.
So the other is reflective listening, where you just simply reflect what the person is saying. Now, where that's going to get dicey is when you need to explain your behavior. And so
mm-hmm.
you're going to need to take approaches like, you know, I can't really say what was motivating me. I know that I can speak to you from a place where I am now, if that's helpful.
Right.
So, you know, you can always go to general things like, how are you going to be different in the future? Well, I hope we're all working at being more conscious and more aware and more compassionate, and I certainly am.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a staying really, working hard to stay really present and using these various techniques to be able not to get pulled into egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate.
Right.
Yeah. But, what you're looking at in truth, from my perspective, is kind of a lifetime of practice and how to be skillful with practice in difficult circumstances.
Mm-hmm. So that question about someone who does know your work versus someone who doesn't, I mean, my mother would fall into the doesn't know your work kind
right.
of category. Same technique?
But that, I hope your mother is not in that catechizing role of explain yourself or else.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's
so,
true.
And most people aren't. That's why I'm expressing a fair level of surprise that someone who called themselves a friend would be operating out of that place. You know, most friends don't. You know,
right.
It could be a, guys, that hurt my feelings when that happened, or can you tell me what was going on with you, because I really, you know, that was upsetting to me, or whatever, but not a list of demands.
And that's probably a little bit harsh, because it was in that vein that you just said, but it seemed like every time I said I couldn't answer because I wasn't in that place anymore, or am not right now, another front was opened up for attack. And then the final one was when I talked about recording and listening, how she had talked to someone who had a one-year practice and they stopped, which she didn't know why that happened. And I don't know why she brought that up, but it seemed to me that as a way of saying you're going to fail at this. So,
Well, and of course, you don't want to get too busy projecting on.
Exactly.
Yeah, what something like that means.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So, you know, it's a great workshop. Right?
Yes.
You
yes.
just keep you get to keep going along, and you watch it and one of the things that you could do, again, the reflective listening can be really helpful in mm-hmm. having the other person feel heard and for you to be open and understanding about mm-hmm. their perspective. And the other thing you could do is record conversations and then listen to it and talk with your mentor about what's going on and get some insights into a next time thing. And perhaps one thing that could go a long ways towards smoothing the waters is just to say to this person, you know, it's really important to me that we work this out. I want us to be okay.
Yeah.
And oftentimes people don't assume that. And so being reassured of that might smooth a lot of ruffled feathers.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Let me know, huh?
Okay. All right. Thank
Let
you
me
very
know how
much.
It goes. You're All very right. welcome.
Okay.
Take care.
Thanks.
Oh, take care. Oh, that's good, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Take care, Mira. It's a very cool thing to do. All right.
Thank
good night.
You. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Mira. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And we have another caller here, Sherry.
Perfect.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, my God. Is this me? Am I on the air?
It is you, and you are on the air. Well, you're on the air. We're not sure if you're you. Okay, you'll have to establish that as we
sure,
go along.
I'm not sure if I'm me. That's why I'm calling.
Say it again.
Well, I'm sorry. This is exciting, and I'm a little nervous. My name is Helga.
Hello.
I'm calling from Charleston, South Carolina, and I lived in Marin for 20 years, and I've never heard of you. And I don't know if that is possible.
I'm very popular in Charleston, though.
Well, I know one person that knows you, and she gave me a book that I read at a time that I really needed it.
Good.
And yeah, so here I am. I've never been to any of your workshops, obviously. And I just want to. I've been having a very, very difficult time. I just want to say I grew up in Germany with an alcoholic, very abusive father. I was anorexic in my 20s. I went to India. I lived in an Osho community for 15 years and was very, very happy there and discovered for the first time in my life, you know, what a joy it can be to live.
Mm-hmm.
And after I left, I developed an addiction to caffeine, which kind of sounds very strange, but for me it was an addiction and basically just a continuation of the anorexia.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd not dealt with that till recently when I got very ill. I got gastritis. I started getting terrible anxiety attacks. And what came up for me was basically all the feelings that I think I didn't know how to deal with, which mostly was a lot of terror and a lot of rage.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt like the personality that was kind of, you know, stuck on the addiction, kind of like it all fell apart. You know, I used to feel like, you know, I used to kind of present myself as a cool cucumber. That's how I used to call it, you know, where nothing really fazed me, but I think underneath I had so much terror and so much rage, and I just didn't know how to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, the addiction to caffeine was probably my way of, you know, like an antidepressant, using caffeine as an antidepressant. And when all that, you know, when I couldn't use that anymore, I just felt like all these, you know, this whole nightmare started for me. And just seeing, you know, seeing a lot of things that I didn't want to look at before. It's like how in some ways I feel like I've lived my whole life, a big part of my life, in this scenario of a victim of being my own abuser and the abused. And here I am. Now, you know, I'm on, I have to go on antidepressants for a while because it just got very overwhelming. And so I basically have two questions. You know, I feel like I've tried to deal with this rage that I felt inside of myself my whole life. And for the most part, I've tried to, I think, get rid of it. And I'm trying to, you know, obviously I haven't gotten rid of it, and find a different way of looking at it or being with it. Which has been difficult because, you know, it feels really immense when it comes up. And the other thing that I want to ask about is that I obviously have a very, very hard time or don't really know how to let go. You know, I've held on to all these things for so long, you know, even though they're toxic. And I was just wondering if you have anything to offer.
Okay. Well, an entire awareness practice, yes. And it's not, as I was saying to the, I think the last person, you know, it's not a quick fix, right? So,
right.
I have some questions for you. You were, for 15 years, you were happy in the ashram. How did you do that?
You know, it's, when I went to India and, you know, started being around Osho, the anorexia just went away. I never dealt with it. You know, I never really looked at it, but I, you know, I did groups. I did all the things. I did a lot of meditation, and then I was a part of the commune for 15 years. And I think because I felt safe and supported and surrounded by, you know, people that I loved and could open my heart to, all this, it all went away.
Mm-hmm.
And when I left that field, and you know, where I felt, you know, where I left the support, and you know, started just being on my own in the world, and you know, living my life and all that, you know, I just, you know, it felt like it all just came back right where I left it.
Yeah, which is probably
true. You know, it
just
came back in a different form.
Yeah. So one other question.
You know, the thing is, also it's much more easy, you know, to hide that kind of addiction because everybody runs to the coffee shop all day long. You know, so,
right.
But for me, it was an addiction, and I knew that it wasn't good for me. I could feel it. You know, it was like a stain on my soul. It was something that held me, you know,
yeah.
And I tried to get off the addiction, you know, and I realized it doesn't matter what one is addicted to. It's like, you know, every time I went off it, I felt this freedom and this bigness and, you know, the peacefulness and the serenity, and some part of me always went back to the addiction.
That's right. That's right. It,
you know,
that's right.
Let me ask
you this. Do you know that that makes you like every other conditioned human being on the planet? Yeah? So that, I mean, that's just good to know. And the other thing that's good to know about that is it is not some part of you. Okay? So we make a very specific differentiation between you, the authentic human being, and this kind of parasite that has attached itself and lives off of your life force. And that's mm-hmm. what controls people, and that's what makes people go back, and it also convinces people that it is who you are and you're the agent of that, and it's not true. Because and you felt that and you articulated it very clearly. There's the what it's like when that's not present in your life, what it feels like when life is living through you authentically, and then there's what it feels like when that comes back in and takes over.
Right.
Yeah. It's very, very
right.
Dark.
I did, but it went, you know, it went so far, you know, it's like that I, as I said, I got really, really ill, and then
yes.
And that was when I had to let go of the addiction. I felt like that was the first time really that I got in touch with, you know, it's like what was underneath all of that.
Yes.
It's just been
yes.
very difficult to deal with it because, as I said, you know, I felt so much terror and so much rage, you know, and it kind
okay.
of went from one to the other and, you know, back and forth.
Yes.
And
yeah.
And I've tried to just be with that, but I, you know, I could
no.
It, I couldn't do it.
No.
You know, that's
and
why I'm on drugs now.
And you shouldn't do it. You couldn't and you shouldn't. So here's the intellectual, it's just an intellectual understanding from the way we look at life in this particular practice, okay? So there's little person came in to the world and encountered alcoholic father and craziness and all of that, got scared, traumatized, and became a control freak. Right? The way the control
right.
played out was through anorexia, right? So there she is. She's
right.
controlling everything about her life because otherwise she's going to just fly apart and go nuts. So then she finds this community of people where she feels comfortable and safe, and through a lot of practices and paying attention and meditation and all of that, she learns to let down her guard and be open. And she's very close to the way she was when she first arrived in this life. Okay? So
mm-hmm.
all of that trauma just kind of went away because there was nothing, there was no attention on it. There was nothing holding it in your life because
mm-hmm.
all of your attention was on where you were, enjoying life, being happy, growing, learning, okay, all of that. You left that environment, and what happened, and you said it very clearly, it's as if you went right back to where you were before you went in the ashram.
Hmm.
Right? At which
I would
agree with you. That's exactly what happened. Okay? So there you are now. Now you're a grown woman, and you have the emotional coping mechanisms of the person that you were before you went into the ashram, which basically means none. Okay? And so all of that stuff came rushing back in to take over the form. I'm sure with your spiritual background with Isokhan, Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh, but there's some idea of that kind of influence, that kind of karmic conditioning influence on a physical form, right? So there
mm-hmm.
you are. Now you're out there without support, and this force has really come roaring in and is consuming you as a life force. Yeah? So you go back to coping the way you know how to cope, which is to control something in your life and give yourself that feeling of being okay. You're surviving.
Mm-hmm.
Am I right so far?
Yeah, I think I understood what you said. You know, I want to say one thing that, you know, it's like it wasn't quite exactly that I went. I mean, I've learned, you know, since I left the ashram, I did start the addiction, and And I also, you know, I want to say that, you know, a lot of things in my life, you know, I've done a lot of things that were very joyful and enjoyable. So it wasn't like all black and white. But I
That's
did
right.
have,
no.
I did have this part. So I kept a lot of the things, you know, that were very joyous in my life. But there was this stain in that part that held me back this whole time.
That's right. That's right. It's been lurking there, waiting for a moment to take over, essentially.
Right.
And that moment came when your health failed, right? Because suddenly you can't do the things that you were able to do to keep it at bay.
Right.
So now it's got a green light to take over your life.
Right.
Yeah, which is what you've seen happen. Okay, so fortunately, all of this is completely manageable, and it's why we do awareness practice. And it's what, you know, it's everything that you learned in the ashram, right? It's just we do exactly the same thing. It's just slightly different forms of it, okay? And so what I'm going to suggest for you, the person who gave you the book also told you about recording and listening?
Not really, no.
Okay.
No.
All right. Well, that's, of course, what I'm going to suggest to you. Because what that has the ability to do is, one, allow the woman who is struggling with this situation to express herself. Okay? Not the rage and not the terror. They don't get to talk. Okay? The person who gets to talk is the woman who experiences those things, who is the recipient of all of that outpouring of energy and emotion.
Okay.
You're seeing that distinction that I'm making? Yeah.
Yeah.
She gets to talk. What it's like when that stuff comes at her, when all that rage roars through her body, when all of that terror and panic is there. What does it feel like for her? And the piece that is going to be most helpful to her as soon as you get the hang of it is that the mentor, the wisdom, love, and compassion. So when you were at the ashram and you had that experience of being connected with life, of the joyous expression of life being available, do you talk in terms of God?
I don't use the word God, no.
Okay. What would you call that animating force?
Love, universal
okay.
love.
Yep, good. Okay, yep. That will be able to speak to that woman who experiences that rage and who is the recipient. We could say the victim too, but she's not a victim, but she's held hostage by it and she has it dumped on her on a regular basis, okay? That woman is going to talk to that universal force of love. And that universal force of love is going to talk back to her, is going to guide her, comfort her, reassure her, help her, support her. That's the relationship that will be formed, and that's the one that has the ability to turn this around for you.
So let me just make sure that I understand this correctly. So what you're saying is that I record a dialogue between myself.
It's more specific than that. Okay.
Oh.
And keep in mind that this is being recorded, and you can go on and listen to the podcast if you want later, so you don't have to feel like you know you're memorizing all of this right now. But the way that it works is that you will take the recording device and hold it in your right hand.
Mm-hmm.
And that woman will talk about what it's like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what it's like to feel the way how terrifying it is, how upsetting it is, how hopeless she feels, how despairing, she'll talk.
Mm-hmm.
Then you put the recorder in your left hand and you hit play and you listen to her. You listen to her talk about her life experience, okay? And then you wait, and you take that in, And then you're going to hit record, and you're going to let the love, the wisdom, the compassion that animates you talk to her.
Oh.
Okay?
Okay.
So the closest people get to this before they experience it for themselves is usually if you had a dear friend who was going through a situation similar to the one you're going through. You would listen to her talk about how she feels. You would take that in. You would sit with that. And then you would begin to talk with her in a way that would hopefully comfort and support her. You would begin to hear yourself offer her kind of the wisdom, the compassion, the loving kindness that she needs to be embraced in order to be all right and get through this situation and find herself again in that joyful place that she knows. Okay? So it's,
okay.
It's an experience that we know. It's just that you're going to play all of those roles, which you already do. So in this practice, we stop thinking of ourselves as me. I. Okay? We realize that there is that woman who suffers in this condition. There is this force that is talking to her, frightening her, upsetting her. And you can hear it going on in your head. And she's the one who's hearing that. Okay? You, in quotes, you are the awareness that can be aware of all of it. And through this same form speaks the animating force of life that we experience as universal love.
Okay.
Now, I'm not going to try to convince you that this is going to happen next week. All right? But I will say this. If you do this as if your life depends upon it, you will turn this around, and you will be able to do it in a surprisingly short period of time. And I think you know your life does depend on this.
Yep.
Yeah. So do everything you're doing. You know, if it feels comforting to take the antidepressants, whatever that is, if the antidepressants cut you off from what's actually going on with you and you want to be cut off from what's going on with you, then continue with that. If you want not to do that, if you want to address it directly, then as you get stronger in this, you'll cut back on the medication and you'll turn more to the mentor and to universal love to do the healing.
Yeah, I mean, that's my plan. You know,
I
was reluctant, but I just had to do it.
Yes, of course. We do what we need to do. Care and caring, as Mira pointed out, is the cool thing to do for ourselves.
Yeah, that's been hard to come by, but I'm trying.
Yes. Well, now, of course, from my perspective, and I think from yours, because you know, the kind of Western viewpoint is you just do whatever to survive and get to the end of life and then whatever happens. For people who have an Eastern perspective, then this is not a tragedy. It's difficult. It's painful. It's hard. It's part of waking up. It's part of what we're doing in a human incarnation, right? So here's a human being. There is the ability to save her from suffering. You're the one who has the ability to do that. You're ending that karma. You're facing it. God knows how long it's been hanging around, how many lifetimes it's been building. But you're the person most qualified to end that karma. And that's what you're doing. So it's not a tragedy. It's not a horrible thing that we're working through karma. It's a gift. It's an opportunity. It's what we came here for. Yeah, I think you know that. I'd be surprised.
I know that. It just has felt very horrible at times.
Yes, of course it does. Of course it does. That's why it hasn't been faced before.
Right.
Right? If it were easy, somebody else already took care of it.
Yeah.
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 Okay. Stay close, would you? Whoever your person is who gave you the book is probably somebody who could support the recording and listening practice. There's a ton online. You can go to our website, and there's just everything you'd ever want to know about recording and listening. We're here. Stay
okay.
in touch. Stay with us.
I'll come to a retreat next year.
Very good. You could come to the New Year's retreat this year.
The New Year's retreat? Okay, I'll look at that.
Okay, very good.
I have time from work, but...
That's right.
If I have the time, I will come.
That's right. And you're worth whatever it takes.
Hmm.
Keep that in mind, okay?
Okay.
All right. Very good.
Okay.
Good talking with you. Glad you called in.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Helga. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And we are so blessed, Sherry.
We certainly are. And you know, one of the things that we're blessed with, of course, we're blessed with having Gabriel with us. And then we had, what, three people calling in for the first time.
Yes.
How amazing is that?
It's super amazing. It's really a joy and a pleasure for me.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, thank you, sir. Talk to you very soon, I hope.
Okay. Me too. Thank you, Sherry.
Good night.
Good night.